50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
The results found that parents and the general public do not like the idea that young children would have access to explicit content on school library shelves. And there's a lot of discussion today that any attempt to remove such books is an effort at censorship, or that you're banning books. I think that's nonsense.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Jonathan Butcher, author of the recent book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. We go in-depth later on in today's program with Jonathan about what we really agree on. First, we're joined by John J. Miller. He is director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. John, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
Also author of a recent essay over at wordonfire.org, and it's titled, The News is Where You Look. And that's also the first line of this essay, John. What does that mean to you in practice? How does it shape news coverage at various outlets?
It's something a friend of mine said, a fellow journalist said recently, the news is where you look. And what I loved about that line is that it captures the most powerful force in media content. In other words, story selection, how you determine what is the news, what angle you take, how you determine what's not the news. And so much of it is where you look. It's where you look for news. It's what you think is news. And one of the implications, of course, is where are you not looking for news? Are things happening there? But this idea of the news is where you look, I think, captures this important factor in terms of what our media tells us. It has implications for media bias, all kinds of things. But I like that phrase, the news is where you look.
The where is important. The who is important, too. Why is it so important? Why does it matter who is doing this looking in journalism?
We all have our blind spots, of course, and we're prone to look in certain places and not in others. And maybe we can't even see into others. But it's a reminder that there's so much subjectivity in journalism in terms of determining what is the news and who's deciding? Well, it's editors. It's writers. And they don't walk into the office or get an email every morning saying, well, here's the news of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might, but someone's putting that together if they are. You know, the news is a series of independent judgments made by editors and producers and writers and more about what is the news. And so how do they come up with that? And it starts off with, you know, where are you looking? Let's imagine a reporter who covers Congress. And so you're on Capitol Hill. You can look for the press release that the member of the House puts out. And that's a perfectly good place to look for news. You can see the press release that a committee puts out. You can also attend the committee hearing in person and see what people say, hear what people say, observe the different actors. Maybe you wind up sitting down next to somebody who has a stake in the debate and you meet a source that way. So you're always looking around for the news, and it depends on what situations you put yourself in, how aggressive you are in terms of looking for the news. Do you just take the press release and repeat it? And sometimes you do because you can't make it to every meeting, but maybe you do go to the committee meeting. Maybe you see something that nobody else has seen because you were the one who was looking there at that moment.
This essay over at wordonfire.org suggests that curiosity is the most important quality in a journalist. How does curiosity lead to a better media?
I get this question all the time, Scott, of course, from students, also from parents, really from everybody. You know, what is the most important quality in a journalist? And there are lots of important qualities, but I always say curiosity. You need to be curious about the world. You want to be a person who wants to learn about the world we live in and then go tell true stories about it. That's what journalism really is. It's telling true stories about the world we live in. And so as you're looking around to figure out what is the news, it helps be a curious person, someone who asks questions and asks, you know, why is it that way? How, you know, why it used to be a different way? Why has it changed? Or why does this senator say this thing? You know, just ask questions all the time. And so you got to have a kind of curiosity wanting to ask those questions. And I say the second most important quality is humility, because you've got to recognize that you don't know everything. There are people who know a lot more than you do about really every topic, and you need to go find them when you're writing on it. So you need to be a person. You need curiosity, so you ask questions, and then humility, where you go and talk to people who know more than you do, and you go into it knowing they know more than you do, and you want to learn from them, hear what they have to say. You can question them. You don't have to believe everything they say, and probably you shouldn't. It helps to have some skepticism along with all this. But the idea of humility, which is that there are people who know a lot more than you do about what's going on, you know, behind closed doors, what's going on in a different country, why a business makes a certain decision, et cetera. Go find them. So curiosity and then humility. And finally, there's a sense of service, which is go tell a story that people want to hear.
John J. Miller is with us, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College. His essay at wordonfire.org, "The News is Where You Look." You tell the story in the essay about seeing reporters collaborate on a narrative, a takeaway narrative after a debate. Why would a journalist want to have the same story as everyone else? Why not something different?
Yeah, from rival news organizations. And the story is this. I was a number of years ago covering a Senate campaign for a national magazine. And I was writing a profile of one of the candidates, but during my travels, as I was following this candidate around, going to different events and having interviews and all that, there was a debate of the normal sort where the candidates get together and they have their little stump speeches. There's a moderator asking questions. There's some exchanges. I mean, you know, the format is a familiar thing. And in this instance, I was watching the debate, and I was in a room with fellow reporters, and we were just in the audience. We were just observers. We were not moderated or not participating in any way. But here we are. We're covering the debate, which is being broadcast on television, and we're in the room. And when the debate ended after, you know, 60 minutes or whatever, the candidates left, and then the reporters from the different newspapers around the state, which had several media markets, I saw them all clustered together, and they did it right in front of me. They clustered together and talked about what is the news, what is the story here, and they had a little give and take, and they all settled on the same thing, which, because they're political reporters, it happened to be something the Republicans said that they regarded as controversial. And so this is what went out as the report in all these different newspapers in the state, because they gathered together and had this kind of hive mind moment, this herd mentality really on display. And I was astonished. And of course you see this all the time where actually, you know, they don't have to gather to do this kind of thing. Yeah. But here it was in front of me. They're actually doing it, and kind of linking arms to make sure that, you know, readers had the same story from all of them.
Media bias often comes from ideology, but it also can come from a place of ignorance, which is where the curiosity helps out. Are there types of stories or perspectives that tend to be overlooked as a result of that ignorance?
Yeah, there's a lot of ignorance, and ignorance is a tough word. There could also be a kind of innocence to it. I mean, I'm ignorant. Yeah. I'm ignorant of a lot of things, and this is the blind spots I mentioned. You know, if the news is where you look, you can see different things, you can observe them. But you know, we all have blind spots. Like you're driving a car, there are blind spots, things you're not going to see. And in journalism, there are some common blind spots, I think. And one of the points I made in this piece is that religion is one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our so-called mainstream media organizations are just populated by people, entire newsrooms full of people who never walk inside a church. And so they don't think about faith. It just doesn't even occur to them. It is an actual blind spot. They don't think about these kinds of things. And so they don't cover them. It just isn't a part of their world. This is ignorance. And it might be willful. It might actually be, there might be some hostility involved. I'm sure all that is true, but I think a lot of it is just they don't even ever think about it. Mm-hmm. And we all have our blind spots. I have mine, but this is a common one. And so when we think about, you know, liberal media bias, a lot of it is ideological, people wanting to make certain kinds of points and having kinds of commitments that they want to exercise in their journalism, you know, often irresponsibly. Ignorance is a lot of it. And can contribute to a kind of liberal media bias.
Talking with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, also writer at the Wall Street Journal in their new Free Expression section. More with him next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Workers' compensation cases can move really slowly, and it's frustrating. Don't get pressured into hiring the first law firm you meet with just because they were fast to get you on their schedule. Your case impacts every aspect of your life. You want a local attorney that understands that and will get you the best outcome. Interview Patrick Orman of Gorman Law to see if he is the right attorney and to see if you really need an attorney. He will tell you the truth. Call 530-262-2168 or schedule online at Gorman Comp Law. Consultations and workers' comp are always free.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, also a writer, columnist at the Wall Street Journal in their new Free Expression section. He wrote an essay recently at wordonfire.org called "The News is Where You Look." That's what we talk about today. John, you pick up on this split in polling between journalists and regular Americans about whether stories should always strive to give every side equal coverage. And perhaps you've heard talk about this, like there's no need to give the opposite side of climate change. It's settled science. There's no need to have a response. Why would journalists in these cases be more likely to say that it's not a priority to get equal coverage?
Yeah, that's amazing. There's a poll that says most Americans would like their news stories to cover the different sides of a debate. And the same poll says most journalists disagree with this. They don't think that's important. And it's exactly what you say, which is that journalists have decided that they are experts. You know, this is the opposite of humility, mm-hmm. right? They've decided that they're the experts and they don't need to give equal space to untrue things, to, you know, climate skepticism. Climate change skepticism is a perfect example of that. They view this as just beyond question, or, you know, questioning the results of an election, for instance. You know, now we're increasingly seeing in the last 5 years, you know, someone makes a claim without evidence. Mm-hmm. We hear all, you know, this is now inserted into news stories all the time. So you get this sort of, you know, journalist wanting to have quote unquote expert judgment all the time, rather than just saying this is what the person said and then, you know, presenting what evidence there is, or maybe not if there isn't any or whatever. But there's a kind of sense among a lot of journalists, I think, that they are the experts and they can now tell us the truth because they're going to protect us from what they view as maybe harmful ideas. And I will say at a certain level, you know, we do want a kind of expertise in journalism. I mean, we all want to rely on editors and reporters and producers who exercise judgment, mm-hmm. and good judgment on what is the news. And, you know, I can't keep track of everything that's happening in the world. And I try pretty hard as the director of a journalism program. I mean, I read a lot of news every day, but I can't keep track of everything that's going on in the world. And I depend on these people in the media to make good decisions about what I should know. And then they present it and, you know, and I read some things and not others. So you do need journalists with good judgment. What you don't need are these ones who they lack humility.
Yeah.
And they say, well, there's certain things we're not even going to discuss. Or if we do discuss it, we're going to make clear that, you know, we disagree with it and think it's a horrible idea.
Talking with John J. Miller, director of the Dow Journalism Program here at Hillsdale College, his essay at wordonfire.org, "The News is Where You Look." We have seen one of the major newspapers in the country, the Washington Post, make some wholesale changes to the op-ed pages, but also among its reporting staff. Now, we did hear after 2016, too, media outlets trying to find and understand Trump supporters and change the tenor of coverage. That didn't really take hold. Have you seen a general shifted approach among the media?
No. I mean, there was, I think, after the 2024 election, there was another round of we need to do a better job of understanding the country. In other words, you know, a kind of honest liberal saying we don't understand what's going on out there. And you saw this after 2016 and some, you know, gestures towards doing a better job of covering the rest of the country. And you know, a few efforts made in that direction, but then quickly abandoned, mm-hmm. because, you know, Trump is awful or whatever. And I think there were some moments like that post 2024 as well, but I think they've essentially reverted to form. The Washington Post, though, is an interesting case, which you mentioned, which is changing its editorial perspective, which for years has been just conventional liberalism. Basically a mouthpiece of the Democratic Party, in all the ways you would expect a liberal newspaper to be. It was just that. It was really the sort of conventional wisdom of liberal Washington was the Washington Post stance. Well, Jeff Bezos is the owner. He's not, you know, he didn't buy it last year. He's owned it for a number of years, but he finally is starting to exercise some of his control over the Washington Post and saying we need to change this and make the page a little more interesting. And we're going to commit ourselves to the idea of freedom in every sense. And so they're reorienting the page a little bit. There have been some interesting staff changes there. Mm-hmm. We're just starting to see some of the changes. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out in the months ahead. There'll be some controversies about departures, already have been, and hirings and et cetera. But, you know, the first signal of this was last fall when Bezos essentially spiked
right.
the Washington Post's endorsement of Kamala Harris. And he said, we're not going to endorse for president. And this caused a kind of, I don't know, staff revolt is too big of a term, but there's a lot of discomfort with that in the newsroom because they all wanted to endorse Kamala Harris. And Bezos was like, look, you know, when we endorse Kamala Harris, it confuses a lot of readers who think our news coverage is one-sided, even though very often it is. but he says it creates confusion among readers. And I think he's right about that. At any rate, they're making a lot of changes there, and I'm interested to see what happens next. I think it's going to be a better opinion section in the Washington Post.
John J. Miller leads the journalism program here at Hillsdale College, and the program emphasizes learning by doing, and journalism here at Hillsdale is a minor and not a major. So why is that, and how do students who are interested in journalism grow through the hands-on work they do here?
We're a liberal arts college. Small L liberal arts college, which means we think our students should major in traditional academic disciplines, major in history, in biology, in English, whatever. Focus your studies there. We also do journalism, and we do have some courses on journalism. It is a minor, and you can get a minor in journalism here, but the biggest emphasis we have within this journalism program is the hands-on learning, the fact that we have a campus newspaper, that we have a campus radio station, which, Scott, you and I are sitting in a studio at the campus radio station right now. And the way you learn journalism is by doing it. I can teach students some things in a classroom. I can tell them stuff. But ultimately, you've got to go report stories, write articles, lay them out on a page, do all the production. It's like shooting free throws. I can describe to you how to shoot a free throw. You know, bend your knees and, you know, put your toes on the line and, you know, don't cross the line. You can say a lot of things about that, and that's even valuable information, but ultimately you gotta go shoot a bunch of free throws. And if you shoot them, you'll get pretty good at them, or at least you have a chance of getting pretty good at them. So in journalism here, we have students work on the campus newspaper. They put out a paper every week. It's a student-run publication. We have faculty advisors. We try and train them, but they're putting out a newspaper every week. And we have a radio station, which is a spoken word format. We have hours and hours of student programming every day. And it's like the applied art of rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you want to learn how to communicate. Well, how about sitting in front of a microphone and sounding good for 10 minutes and having a monologue that is actually interesting? You know, how do you do that? It's harder than it sounds, and you know, the great ones make it sound easy, but it takes practice, it takes discernment, and that's what we teach, and you learn it by doing it.
John J. Miller is the director of the Dow Journalism Program at Hillsdale College. You can read his essay at wordonfire.org titled, The News is Where You Look. You also now can find him writing in the Wall Street Journal in Free Expression and newsletter-focused opinion brand. You can find it at WSJ.com. John, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Jonathan Butcher joins us. He's the author of The Polarization Myth. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up, fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Where you are and whenever you want. And it's always free. Find out more about all of our shows at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You can subscribe to any program with new episodes delivered right to your device. If you want to come close to stepping inside a Hillsdale College classroom, well, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network is for you. Get informed and get entertained at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Jonathan Butcher. He's the Will Skillman Fellow in Education at the Heritage Foundation, also the author of a new book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
We've heard a lot these past few months, 12 months maybe, about 80-20 issues, especially pertaining to President Trump. But reading the foreword and introduction, your idea goes back well before the beginning of this year of 2025, that there were these issues out there that people really agreed on but just didn't know it. What struck you as being unique about that?
Well, we are told over and over again by the mainstream media and by, quote, experts that America is polarized and that there's nothing that Americans can agree on. And they're making movies in Hollywood about a civil war and airstrikes being called you know, on states around the U.S. from Washington, when in reality, Americans actually agree on quite a bit when it comes to the issues. When we talk about things like the use of, say, racial preferences in college admissions, or when we talk about teaching the idea of gender to young children, especially in grades K through 3, these are things that Americans agree on, right? We don't want racial preferences. We want students to be judged based on their actions and behavior. We want young children to be protected from ideas that they're not ready for, right? That they're not mature enough to understand. And that was just a remarkable thing that our survey uncovered. And I felt like it needed to be written down so that Americans understood we actually really are speaking the same language culturally on a great many important issues.
And you point out that it's these experts that say we're polarized, or we see, yes, movies saying there's a civil war coming, or reports saying that we've never been farther apart. Should we trust the experts on this matter?
Well, I think when it comes to politics and even politicians, I mean, there's evidence from voting that there's some polarization still, but that doesn't mean that in the daily life that we each lead, right? Going off to work, sending our kids to school, watching the news and how we interpret the world around us. There's actually quite a bit of agreement that we don't want boys participating in girls' sports, for example. We have a majority who doesn't want boys to have access to girls' private spaces, right? I mean, these are things that Americans in our daily lives, we all actually agree on, and that matters because as we participate in community life, as we have policymakers looking to create constituencies to make very sound public policies, they can rest these ideas on this polling, right, on this perception.
The Polarization Myth is the new book by Jonathan Butcher. Inside there are, four chapters covering various topics. Five chapters, check that. And the first one starts with DEI. And there has been some efforts under the Trump administration to eliminate DEI where possible, but it seems to have its fingers stuck very hard into universities and colleges across the country. Why are college officials going to such great lengths to defend DEI, to defend racial preferences in admissions, when, again, the polling's all over the polarization myth, would say the public doesn't agree with any of that?
Well, and it's not just academia. It's also in the business world. I mean, you have employees being forced to undergo trainings that tell them that they are guilty of some sort of collective guilt or collective oppression just based on the color of their skin. I had the chance to interview a scientist, a chemist at Chevron Phillips, who had to do a DEI training program. And, you know, he said, look, I don't understand why you're telling me that, you know, George Washington's teeth may have come from slaves. I'm trying to create plastics here, right? Out of using oil, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not helping me for my job. And it's also making me feel highly uncomfortable with the idea that I should think America is irreparably burdened by this idea of racial oppression. So that was a fascinating interview, and there are many, many others like it, that you can find in the business sector around the country. And the same is true in higher education, perhaps even more so. I think some of the more interesting stories that I included in that chapter are from individuals who were DEI trainers themselves, who their job was to conduct these programs on college campuses, and they themselves were canceled because in one case there's a community college professor in California who dared to say that a diversity of ideas is actually an important thing and lost her job because of it. So I think even those who push the DEI agenda have started to see that it's even more narrow than they once thought it was.
The second chapter in the polarization myth is on COVID, student achievement, the reading wars. I love all the surveys, all the numbers in here. I was perhaps most surprised by seeing that 52% of parents are satisfied with K-12 education in the country. That seems high considering the number of problems we see in schools all across the country, particularly in K-12 education. Were you surprised by that number?
I was, and it is true, though, that the approval rates have been going down, especially coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at, there are kind of two questions here. One is, do you approve of public schooling in the United States? And I think those numbers are low and have been on a downward trend for several years. And then there's the question of, are you happy with your child's education at a local school? And parents often say yes. And so I think what we find is that parents tend to be satisfied with the school that they have chosen. And there's probably some selection bias, right, that helps to explain that, right? If you've either made the choice or if you've made some sort of commitment to where you send your child to school, you probably have a little bit of bias towards that institution. And that's, you know, that's something that we found across surveys as well, for many years. So to help explain this, I think what we need to see is that about 2 million kids are nowhere to be found on public school rolls coming out of the COVID pandemic. We still have kids who simply didn't go back to school or that mm-hmm. we can't have no record of. So that's a problem. And we also have seen public school enrollment decline by about 2.5% coming out of the pandemic. And so more and more today, parents are making choices about how and where their children learn, whether that's through a private school scholarship or homeschooling or a learning pod or something like that. It's reshaping the whole landscape. And that is truly, truly notable.
There's been recent discussion about the Mississippi miracle and the improvements in K-12 education in that state. It's also referenced inside the polarization myth. What's Mississippi doing? Is it repeatable elsewhere?
Yeah, they've really invested in improving reading instruction, especially by changing how it's taught. And, you know, there was a terrific podcast that has made the rounds in the last 5-7 years called Sold a Story that talks about how American schools had been using cueing or the whole language method of teaching reading, which is, it's really a part of the progressive movement that dates back more than 100 years. And we've just found that this is really to blame for the very low reading scores, reading proficiency across the U.S. Now, today, we have across states, increasingly state lawmakers are demanding that educators use what has really become known as, quote, the science of reading. And it's not phonics only, right? It's not phonics on its own, but it does reintroduce the teaching of phonics into the classroom. And that's what had been missing, right? The cueing and whole language methods had been taught at the exclusion of phonics. And I think that is a big change that Mississippi helped introduce. Louisiana is another state that has been doing that. And my book talks about other states where lawmakers are saying, hey, this is important now that we really change the way in which we teach reading for the next step. And the next step is to be able to teach other subjects in a rigorous way, right? Civics, history, all, you know, those subjects are really what we need to help students become participating members in society.
That's Jonathan Butcher. His brand new book, The Polarization Myth, will continue in a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Mandina's Cabinets in Anderson designs custom kitchens, bathrooms, and offices that no big box store can match.
They are the local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinets.
The local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinets.
The local pros.
530-365-8108 or visit mandinascabinets.com.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with Jonathan Butcher. He's the author of The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. Jonathan, I was unaware of this term until maybe a year ago when I interviewed someone about the idea of action civics and how the Obama-era Department of Education, Artie Duncan, began in inserting action civics into schools across the country. What is that concept, and why isn't it doing a good job of teaching our school children about civics?
Right. Well, it's not just what they've introduced, it's what they've removed. I think that they've removed a teaching of dates and facts and figures and information about our founding fathers, significant individuals from America's past, and they've replaced it with the encouragement that students use a issue that they are very interested in and become politically active. So lobbying a lawmaker for, you know, not using plastic bags in the grocery store, for example, or holding a walkout that is condoned by the school faculty and leadership to protest gun rights, right? These are they've sort of skipped the part where we teach students about why there are differing views on these topics and what actually is an appropriate way to consider, right, highly charged political topics. Let's just skip to the end. Let's just tell them how to become lobbyists and how to become activists without giving them the ability and the tools and the history, frankly, to be able to determine how to understand these difficult topics. And without that basis, without that grounding, students, you know, they're applying more emotion than they are actually thinking critically about why there is such a debate on these questions.
You see, Americans want, the polling says, Americans want civics to work for the betterment of their children. What kind of things do parents tell us they want to see inside civics class?
Well, it's interesting. When you look back at civics textbooks from 100 years ago, I think it's not uncommon. It's actually quite common, I found, in civics books to find ideas of responsibility, of virtue, of courage, of responsibility for your actions, the idea that teachers are their best lessons are their personal example, how they live their lives, right? These are the things that are at the heart of civic behavior and civic activities, right? We should be teaching young people that it matters the way they treat other people, right? It matters how they pay attention to the way they act, the way that they complete their coursework, the way that they are engaged in community life, right? It is an issue of personal responsibility that matters. And I think that's being lost today. And instead you have, as you were saying, this action civics idea that we all need to be lobbying lawmakers for some sort of pet cause. And I think that's the wrong lesson. I mean, parents want, again, our survey found in others that I've either done myself or seen, parents want virtue and character taught to young people.
Jonathan Butcher with us. His book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. There's a section, well, actually multiple sections have questions where you break it down between general public, parents of students, and then school board members. And the sex v. gender chapter, is the difference is never more stark than there, I think, where the school board members, according to the poll, want graphic sexual acts in books, 36%, compared to 13% of the general population. Why are the school board members so skewed when compared to the rest of the country?
Yeah, our school board survey is not nationally representative. It's a little heavier on the Southeast, but I included those results to give people a sense of what those who are, you know, serving on district boards are thinking. And I think the comparison is instructive because these are the people who are making decisions about what is on school library shelves. And I think that the results found that parents and the general public do not like the idea that young children would have access to explicit content on school library shelves. And there's a lot of discussion today that any attempt to remove such books from school libraries is an effort at censorship, or that you're banning books. And I think that's nonsense. I mean, I think the reality is that it is the responsibility of adults to determine age-appropriate material, right? That's the job of school board members and parents and educators. And one of our survey questions found that when we asked people who should be making these decisions, the highest response was to a combination of parents and school leaders. So I don't think that the general public is saying we should remove the authority from educators to make these decisions, but at the same time, we should include parents because they do, in fact, know their children, and they do have interests in what their children are being taught and how what values are being passed on to them. So I think that this increasingly around the country, especially over the last 18 months, I would say, we have seen evidence of states that have taken steps to either include parents in the decision-making about what books are used or otherwise take material that has no place in schools off the shelves. And that's not banning it. It just means it's not age-appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, in the out-of-touch teachers union chapter, you say if you're not familiar with restorative justice or have yet to form an opinion, you're in good company, which is great because I've heard the phrase, but I don't fully understand what restorative justice is. Explain for our audience, and how does that tie in to the actions of teachers unions across the country?
Especially over the last decade, there's been a lot of attention to how school discipline is handled in classrooms, whether or not students should be suspended or expelled. Those on the radical left have made the argument that there is a school-to-prison pipeline. When you suspend or expel students, that you are setting them up to wind up in jail or in prison. And what that has done is it's allowed schools to adopt policies that keep dangerous, if not just disruptive students, in classrooms, which makes it more difficult for their peers to do well in school. It also allows, you know, violent students who frankly need some sort of discipline and oversight to remain in classrooms, and it becomes a threat to their peers. Restorative justice is this idea that instead of disciplining students, you have they call it a restorative circle in some cases, where you go face to face with the person who you have wronged or who you have accused, and you somehow talk it out, have a meeting of the minds, and you resolve the situation, and then you get up, shake hands, and everybody's friends again. I think it rarely works that way, and nor should it. I think if you leave out the whole discipline part mm-hmm. of the exercise, then students haven't learned anything. Restorative justice, you can trace at least part of it back to an attempt in prison populations to make restitution. The original purpose of restorative justice was to restore. If something was, you know, damaged with arson, if something was stolen, if a person was injured, the idea was that the guilty party would be a part of a restorative act to resolve what was damaged. And the way it's used in schools is simply a talk therapy that removes the discipline part. And I think that's been very, very harmful for young people.
Final question for Jonathan Butcher. His book is The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. At the end, there's a section with conclusion, recommendations. Something that you spoke about earlier in the book, bring back here, is teaching the success sequence. Tell people what that is. And this is, you know, talk about not being polarized. It seems like everyone should agree on these very simple things inside the success sequence. So what's controversial about it?
So the success sequence has been in the research literature for more than 20 years. And it's the idea from social science that if a young person finishes high school, enters college or gets a job, enters the workforce, and then gets married before having a child, they are far less likely to live in poverty as an adult. And it turns out in the research that this is true. It is true that those in their 20s, if you finished high school, got a job or entered college and got married before you had a child, you were far less likely than your peers to live in poverty. And not just live in poverty, but actually reach middle class, according to research, especially on the millennial generation. So we should, at age-appropriate levels, be teaching young people these things, right? I mean, I think it is a simple part of the process of character formation, where you can tell young people, look, it matters if you finish high school. It matters if you do well. It matters if you, when you are finished, if you enter the workforce and are prepared to take responsibility for yourself, or if you go to college. And then when you choose to get in a relationship, if you get married before having children, you do these three things, these three parts of the success sequence, you are far less likely to find yourself in poverty. It's a way to set yourself up for success in your adult life.
Jonathan Butcher is the Will Skillman Fellow in Education at the Heritage Foundation and the author of the new book, The Polarization Myth, America's Surprising Consensus on Race, Schools, and Sex. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to John J. Miller from here at Hillsdale College and Jonathan Butcher, author of The Polarization Myth. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Ready to boost your learning and earning potential? Shasta College can help. Full-time students may qualify for 2 years of free tuition to jumpstart a high-demand career. Pressed for time? We get it. That's why we offer 8-week compressed, cohort-based, and online or hybrid classes designed for busy adults. Spring classes start January 21st, so now's the perfect time to plan your next step. For more information, contact shastacollege.edu.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies
and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.